As we've heard, it's predicted that climate-driven extreme weather events, such as flooding, are going to become more common and more severe. The big question is, what can we do about it? How are we going to protect ourselves in the future? With me is Ilan Kelman. He's a researcher in risk and disaster reduction at the Institute for Global Health at UCL. So, Ilan, if the risk of flooding in many places around the world is only going to get worse, what can we do? Where are we with this?
Well, the first thing that we can do is actually learn from our past. So flooding has always happened and humans have been dealing with it for 10,000 years, sometimes better, sometimes worse. So let's look at what went wrong, what went right, and try and implement that. We can do that at the very small level, at the household level, so people can make decisions in their own properties to use flood-resistant finishes, flood-resistant materials. But there's much wider issues in terms of planning, urban governance, dealing with people's streets, houses, infrastructures. And that means planning, living with rivers, living with coasts. A floodplain is called that for a reason. That's the bit that floods. It is a job to do. So maybe we should think about the way we live, how we live, where we live, and let the floodplain do its job.
So where are some parts of the world that are doing this well, that are coping with flooding and floodplains?
Well, I grew up in Toronto in Canada, and I always enjoyed the ravine system, which was wonderful recreational pathways, wildlife, cycling, walking. Then when I got into this as a profession, I realized, in fact, it came from flooding. So in 1954, a devastating hurricane went through Toronto, Hurricane Hazel. It killed about 83 people. And in response, the government said, well, we're going to let the ravines, the rivers, be floodplains, which is what they are meant to be because they're beside a river. So they designated it to be green areas, greenways, recreational pathways, and building is now forbidden there.
Now, as the global population does increase, though, building is encroaching on floodplains. You know, I've lived in East London, which is basically a swamp, and they're building all kinds of things right next to the river. And is this risky, not just in London, but in other parts of the world? Should we just not be building there at all? Can it be possible to build safely in these areas?
Wherever we build, there's going to be some risks. Therefore, we have to ensure that we have the knowledge and work with the people in the areas to determine what risks they do want, what risks they don't want. If we avoided all floodplains and all other risky areas, we wouldn't be able to build anywhere. That's where we decide, well, maybe at the local level, maybe at the household level, what we have to do is accept that some houses, some buildings are going to be flooded at times, but construct them in such a way that it's easy to wash them out, clean them afterwards, and then go back and live there.
And presumably tell people to store stuff in waterproof boxes?
Well, part of it is ensuring that there are not valuables on the ground floor. Part of it is ensuring that we do have an adequate warning system. Part of it is people knowing they are in the floodplain and therefore being able to respond and react when warnings are issued.
Tell me a bit more about some of the kinds of strategies that we can use to maybe to enable us to build on floodplains. Because, for example, just building urbanisation increases the risk of flooding. Are there ways that, for example, planning or housing could help to mitigate some of those risks?
This is a lot of the challenge, that people do need a place to live. We do need the infrastructure. As soon as you pave something over, that increases runoff. But there are ways to reduce that. So we can use, for example, porous material on the roads. That means that it will rain on the road and go straight through, rather than necessarily giving driveways, rather than necessarily paving over front gardens. It would be possible to keep them as plants. And also, a lot of it is simply the layout and the planning to ensure that when it does rain, the water does go into the river and that the river has the capacity to take that water rather than bursting its banks.
Is there a risk of kind of over-engineering this? How often would these kind of events happen? Would it make it worth it in financial terms to build all this kind of stuff in?
Well, certainly at the moment, in many places in the UK, we are over-engineering anyway. And a lot of the over-engineering is an attempt to separate people from the water. That makes a lot of sense. No one wants to be flooded. It does keep us dry. On the other hand, then, when it does rain and as the rainfall patterns change, when flooding happens, it seems unusual. People are not ready for it. So what we have to do is actually work with the people and ourselves to try and determine what balance are we seeking. How often will we accept being flooded? Or do we want to completely separate ourselves from the water, recognizing that maybe every 50 years, maybe every 100 years is going to be a massive flood? There's no quick fix. There's no silver bullet. We simply need to recognize there's a whole variety of solutions we can take, and it really depends on how much we are going to accept being flooded, to what degree, and how frequently.
And we've just heard from Claire earlier about the vulnerability of developing countries, countries that are poorer. How can they cope with these kind of risks?
Everyone, whether they're in Myanmar, as Claire mentioned, whether they're in East London where you live, everyone has some form of knowledge. But they also have gaps in their knowledge. That's where it's not about going in and bestowing our wonderful aid and wonderful ideas on these poor people. It's actually about ensuring that we work with the people, we use their knowledge, recognize what they don't know, and work together to avoid the risk of flooding.
Thanks very much. That's Ilan Kelman, and thanks to all our guests this week, Rob Thompson, Liz Lewis, and Claire Grisafi.
Time now for our question of the week with Felicity Bedford, who's been taking a look at her picks from the questions that you have been sending in. And this one comes from Jess Gonzalez.